Hello, and welcome to the Green Minds podcast.
Showcasing the science, stories, and solutions behind climate change with Phoebe Scott,
Alex Miller,
Lottie Flashkus,
and Guy Wilkinson.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to our listeners for this week's episode of the IB Green Minds podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Rishi Gupta, who is co-founder of two companies, Zero Waste Club and Gomi Design. Rishi is also an alumnus of the Imperial Business School. So, Rishi, it's an extra special honour to welcome you on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me back, Alex. Really excited to speak about Zero Waste Club and Gomi Design. And yeah, really delighted that people are interested in the whole idea behind the entrepreneurial journey in the green space and what's happening in the green space. So happy to be here.
Great. To start us off, it would probably be good to ask you to explain to listeners a bit about yourself, your background, and maybe just give a flavour of what Zero Waste Club and Gomi Design are about, and then we can take a deeper dive.
Yeah, sure. So I co-founded Zero Waste Club when I was doing my bachelor's. I was doing my bachelor's at UCL. I was studying a mixture of chemistry and neuroscience, and I wasn't really into that subject or into that degree. I was very much doing it because I didn't know what else to do. And during my second year of university, I co-founded Zero Waste Club with one of my friends. And it was kind of like by mistake. We were just thinking, okay, we want to make money. We have no money. We're completely broke. We care about the environment. We can maybe make something out of it. And I guess we started on that journey when I was in my second year. And then, yeah, so I started working on Zero Waste Club during my time at university. And then in my third year of university, I decided to co-found Gomi Design with my co-founder from Zero Waste Club and two other co-founders. That was kind of like a really bad idea thinking about it, because co-founding two companies isn't really the right way to go when you're starting off and when both companies aren't really making any money. So, but the reason why I wanted to co-found Gomi was because Zero Waste Club dealt with the upstream side of the waste. So we were preventing waste from coming into the economy or into the planet or something along those lines. And then with Gomi, we wanted to actually take the waste that was the plastic waste that was already being produced and give it some value and bring it back into the economy. So that's why we decided to co-found two companies, because if it was two companies together, it wasn't really very focused and they're two separate areas of the whole green space. So that's why I decided to co-found two companies. And then in my third year, I was thinking, what should I do? The business weren't big enough to grow or be sustainable. So I applied to Imperial. I got scholarships. I decided to let's see, maybe business school will help me grow the business. And yeah, so I got to Imperial, worked on my business alongside the degree. And yeah, and after my degree ended, I went full time into the business because then it was sustainable. So yeah, that's the story of why I'm where I am, or how I am here today.
That's great, thank you. And yeah, it sounds like you really gave yourself a challenge starting two companies near the same time. So we'll start with Zero Waste Club because that's the one that was founded first. And I understand that you started by selling bamboo toothbrushes from a stall at a yoga and vegan festival. How has Zero Waste Club evolved from selling that one initial product to where it is today, with the range of products that it offers?
Yeah, so I guess when we first started, we wanted to actually make toothpaste. And we basically, with the toothpaste, we were making the toothpaste in my room or in my co-founder's room. And we were trying to source some plastic-free packaging for the actual toothpaste, but we didn't succeed. And the toothbrushes were supposed to be a side product. So when we went to the event, we were like, this is not going to work out. We had not prepared. We had no idea what the prices were going to be, but we just thought we should go because we already booked it. So we were only selling bamboo toothbrushes at this point, and I had no idea what the price point should be. So when we went to the event, we set up our stall, and basically I was as customers were coming by, they were like really interested, and I was like, whoa, I didn't expect to sell anything at that point. We had a suitcase full of toothbrushes. And so a customer was like, asked me how much are these? And I was like, yeah, it's £6, which is really expensive. She was like, that's too expensive. Then I was like, oh, how about £5? How about 2 for £5? So we kept trying different prices and then eventually figured out what the price would be. And then at that point, we were like, okay, there's something here. Let's do something about it. And since then, we've basically evolved from just not only selling toothbrushes, we've moved on to selling a range of products to like around over 300 shops in the UK, a large number of shops in the US and in Europe as well. And now we've evolved more from just being zero waste, but being transparent and also kind of creating a mission behind the brand, because the whole idea is that we want to create a zero waste world by 2050. So we want to bring everybody in to that whole idea and mission, and people who buy from us are kind of supporting that mission. So it's kind of been a whole brand building process, also learning about how the supply chain works. There's a lot of greenwashing in the sustainability industry. Some people say something's sustainable, but it may not be. So we're very transparent to like show how our products are made, who makes them, and what materials are there, because obviously consumers are becoming more and more wanting to understand where their products come from, how they're made. So I guess we thought we have nothing to hide. So we thought, why not show the brilliant people involved in making our products? So we've evolved quite a lot since that stage. And I still can't believe we were selling toothbrushes at some event. Yeah, it's crazy.
Great, thank you. And it's really interesting what you talk about, the mission behind the brand, and you've touched on transparency. And I know that on your website, you make a number of other commitments to your customers. Could you perhaps touch on them a little bit more? You mentioned supply chain transparency. I think there's also CO2 offsets and a minimum wage guarantee for suppliers.
Yeah, so in regards to transparency, the reason why we've invested a huge amount of money into it is because there's no regulatory or any law that says that what defines the word sustainability, and large number of companies have just said, yeah, our product is sustainable, but what does that really mean? So because there's a huge wide range of definitions of what sustainability is, we've decided to put all our cards on the table and show what's in our supply chain. And it's not only just showing what's on our supply chain, it's just that we've verified that information through third-party audits. So every single supply chain that we have at Zero Waste Club is third-party audited extensively. And because of that, we are able to verify the information that it comes from the supply chains. And it helps us to also, because these audits happen every 2 years, we're able to help work with the actual suppliers to improve their working conditions, their safety, and actually help them as well, because obviously we know that we can't be perfect, but striving towards something that's perfect is something that we think is a better way of moving forward. And in regards to minimum wage, obviously we believe that everyone who works with us or creates any of our products should be paid at minimum a living wage. I think we're going to change that from a living wage rather than minimum wage, because minimum wage doesn't mean that that's something that's livable. So I think that's really important, because we want people to be happy making our products rather than it being forced labor or something that they're unhappy with. And that's really important for me as well and for my co-founder, because we don't want to cause pain from our actual production. And in regards to carbon offset, so we've always wanted to plant a tree for every single item we sell. So we think that's really important, because we want to give more than we take. So for every single item we sell, we plant a single tree. So at the moment, we've planted over 100,000 trees. These trees have been planted in Nepal, Indonesia, Haiti, so a wide range of places. And it's been through the Eden Reforestation Project. I think that's really important, because we are actually consuming products which result in emissions of carbon dioxide. And one of the ways I started trying to reduce that emission, which is not perfect, but it's a good start, is by like planting as many trees as we can. And the price of planting a tree is always within the cost of the product. So it's very easy for us to plant a tree for every item we sell. And it's always something I enjoy doing and enjoy paying for. It feels really good that the whole community behind Zero Waste Club is able to just plant that many trees. So I'm hoping maybe by within the next 5 years we'll plant a million trees. So that's something we strive towards.
The things you've touched on, they're definitely an increasing area of focus for customers. And I think what you said about setting extremely high standards, and even if you don't miss them, then you still end up in a much more optimal place than you would have done had you not set those targets. So that's really inspiring.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I guess just on the strategy, this is obviously becoming more of a focus for consumers, but is the strategy to capture a larger share of the eco-conscious consumer base, or are you aiming to market more broadly to the general population and perhaps persuade them to use sustainable products with a bit of education as to why this is a good thing?
So yeah, I that's a really good question actually. So I think that we focus on the early adopters, so people who are like really into the whole eco space and people who really understand our mission. But to really have a true effect on our consumption, we need to be able to target people who are outside that space as well, so more people who are in the mainstream market. And I think since I started till today, the market has changed massively. So there's a huge number of people who are now more willing to actually spend that little bit more money towards buying an eco product. And that's been seen because there's so many documentaries that have been coming out. There's one, there's a documentary about plastics on the BBC. There's the huge push towards investing into the green space by accelerated and promoted by David Attenborough. So I guess we kind of want to focus more on the mainstream market, because to have a real effect, we need to be able to bring a huge number of people into the space, because having one person do it perfectly is not as good as having millions of people doing it imperfectly. We don't expect perfection, but we expect a step towards doing something more sustainable, because that could have a huge effect on the environment. So I'm more in for actually reducing our impact as a whole and doing it through business. If I wanted just to make money and live a good life, I could just focus on the eco people and the eco side, because that would be a lot easier to target and a lot easier to convince them, because they're already educated, they're already aware. But I think to really have an effect, you really need to target the wider population.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and completely agree. I think if we want to have an impact, then we need to go beyond just what was traditionally seen as businesses' sole goal to be very profitable. So we've talked about the prior trends, and without wanting to ask you to reveal your trade secrets or future plans, where do you see the main avenues of growth within the zero waste consumer products industry looking forwards maybe 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, that's been something we've been looking at quite extensively. I mean, with the whole COVID situation, the trends have been kind of accelerated. So I'm seeing more of a trend towards people investing money into buying products which last longer. So for example, instead of buying plastic tea bags, buying tea strainers which are made of stainless steel. So obviously the cost will be an initial cost, but then the lifetime of the tea strainer is almost 20 or 30 years. So over time, the cost of the product is actually very low. So people are investing more into buying products that last longer, have a higher quality, and are reusable. So that's where I feel like people are moving towards, instead of, I guess, being more mindful in terms of their consumption areas within the household. For example, razors as well. People are purchasing, instead of using the plastic disposable razors, they're buying the stainless steel razors or the other reusable razors where you can just replace the razor blade and recycle it. So these are all steps towards reusability and investing your money into higher quality products rather than the fast moving disposable kind of products. So that's where I think we're headed.
That's fascinating. And yeah, the circular economy concepts are increasingly important, and encouraging people to think beyond just the product that they've used and then they throw it away and forget about it, and what happens after that is fascinating. So just switching now to Gomi Design, I know it's involved in producing a fascinating product, and I read it that at the end of April this year, you closed a Kickstarter campaign which raised something like 7 times your original goal. You clearly have a product that's in demand. Could you just tell the listeners a bit more about what this product is and what stage of development you are at now?
Yeah, so the whole idea behind Gomi is we want to create a circular economy with electronics, or more sustainable electronics, because the electronics industry is one of the biggest and most wasteful industries. So what we decided to do is we wanted to make something really simple. So we produced a portable charger, and I guess that's almost applies to everyone. Most people carry around a portable charger when they travel. So we thought it would be an easy product to produce. So what we did is we had made the prototype in February time, and we were ready to like launch. But then the whole COVID situation happened. So I was like, let's do a Kickstarter. So we decided to I guess it was kind of an experiment to see what the market fit would be for the product. So we put on Kickstarter, And the portable charger did really well. We had no ad spent on it because we were just thinking we need to have really good cash flow for the next 6-7 months because of COVID. So we had no ad spend on the Kickstarter, and we basically raised a lot of money due to word of mouth. So we're like, this is doing really well, so we should continue walking down this way. So down this route, because there was a huge proof of concept in a way with the Kickstarter. And the idea with the portable charger that most people liked is that we were using batteries that would normally be disposed of into the portable charger, and we were using local plastic waste from companies around Brighton to produce the casing. And I guess people really liked the whole marvel effect of the portable charger and the different colors, because most people will buy with their eyes. So I guess that really helped the whole the design and the sustainability combined really helped with the success of the product and the Kickstarter. In regards to what we're doing now, or what we're doing looking forward, is we're still looking into producing other electronics in the home, so other types of chargers, wireless chargers, so products like that really. It takes a really long time to innovate in terms of that, because we do everything in-house, so everything's made in the UK. So it takes around almost 6 months to produce a single product. So we're still in the development stages of quite a few products. But our first ever Gomi product was some speakers. So we're trying to remake the speakers and do a version 2 of that. So that's what we're currently working on. Hopefully we might do a Kickstarter in March again and see how it goes. But we know all the things where we went wrong. So we'll be able to hopefully raise even more money.
Well, best of luck for that launch. And just going back to the use of or reuse of batteries, I think the recycling there is amazing. And I was just curious, how do you take a battery that's at the end of its life and regenerate it such that it can serve as a well-functioning recharging pack?
Yeah, so the funny thing is that the batteries we were using, we thought we wouldn't be able to reuse the batteries that were disposed of because of the charging ability and the quality of the battery. But there's a huge number of batteries that have been disposed of because there's some errors with the product. For example, the print on the battery is incorrect, or there's a tiny dent on it, or something along those lines. So we first started to find people were disposing of these type of batteries because companies really didn't want it. So we started to source those type of batteries first. And we have some other collaborations with other companies where they have batteries in their products which they only use for a period of 2 or 3 months, and then they put new batteries into the product. So those batteries still have a lot of life still. So we tend to purchase and basically reuse those type of batteries. We haven't gone further downstream into the whole idea of batteries having been already been used, but we're still currently in the whole kind of stage where we're finding companies who are throwing out batteries which are perfectly fine. They have some cosmetic issues, or they have some other small issues where companies are throwing them out. And I can't believe they're throwing these things out. It's like so environmentally damaging to produce a battery. So we decided to take those and give them another life rather than allowing them to go to landfill or wherever they were destined to end up.
That's really cool. And it's amazing to think that companies are able to throw these things away without considering how else they could use them. And just for the listeners, why is battery waste growing into a worldwide problem? You mentioned that they're not very kind to the environment. What are the reasons for that?
Well, there's a huge range of reasons. I guess like now mining for like the core components like cobalt, lithium, they're all really environmentally damaging. And it's not just the environmentally damaging side of it, it's also the ethical side of it, because all of these happen in countries like in Africa, where many people are exploited and the conditions that they are mining it are really poor, and also the environmental damage that mining causes is huge. So as we move towards an economy where cars are becoming electric and batteries are becoming more important in our lives, with devices, laptops, phones and things like that, there's only going to be an uptick in the trend of batteries. So I feel like there's going to be a huge amount of battery waste, and at the moment there's very little scope in terms of how batteries can be really recycled or broken down into their components and brought back into the economy. There's still a lot of research going on. So I think battery waste is going to become a huge issue. And I think that hopefully we will find a way, or companies like, there's loads of companies, recycling companies will find a way to bring back the the essential components of batteries back into the economy. At the moment, we're still like looking into how that might be possible, but that's still, we're nowhere near close to even finding out how we can solve that issue. I think it's something that's such a, it's such a big issue and such a complex issue. I think only the biggest battery manufacturers and companies like Tesla and other companies who produce batteries will be able to solve these issues. And I hope they solve these issues, because this is a really important part of being sustainable, is where does the end product end up once it's done its job. So yeah, batteries are so, I guess they're really good in a way, but at the same time, they're just so environmentally damaging. So managing the waste stream from batteries in the future is going to be really important. Although there is still a big waste stream now at the moment, but I think it's just going to increase in the future.
That's a great point, and one that we've been touching on our course as well. It's almost, people focus on the positives that electrification can bring, but actually, if you don't consider the end of life problems that this can create, then ultimately we might not be that much closer to moving towards a sustainable future. Just taking a step back, you mentioned that your manufacturing base is in the UK. Clearly with COVID, there's been a greater emphasis on onshoring of supply chains. How much of an impact to your carbon footprint does having an onshore manufacturing base make? And presumably there are some local economy benefits as well.
Yeah, so obviously producing products in the UK reduces carbon emissions a significant amount, but still there are some components that are not from the UK. They might be from Germany, they may be from China. So there is still obviously some parts of the components that are not made in the UK. But in regards to benefiting the local economy and the environment, there's a reduction in the carbon footprint, because the heaviest components and some of the most important components that we use are made in the UK and are made by local companies within Brighton as well, or within the UK. And in terms of the benefit in the local economy, it's really nice, because we are manufacturing in the UK, we have to, which is good, we provide jobs for the local economy. And because we're not massive, so I can't say we were making a huge benefit, but we've hired a few people. We have two team members working at Gomi full time. And so I guess there is a benefit in terms of the local economy, but bigger benefit in terms of environmental impact, because our carbon emissions are reduced massively, because we're not shipping goods from, the most heaviest components are not being shipped from China to the UK, which, yeah, it's not very efficient in a way. And I guess that's one of the biggest issues at Zero Waste Club, where most of our products come from Asia. So we really focus on trying to get goods shipped only by sea, which impacts the environment less. And because there's still like a huge amount of like carbon footprint, that's why we're focused on planting a tree for every single item rather than for every order, because we really want to offset as much as we can. So yeah, it's really complicated. Carbon offset is so complicated. There's so many things to consider. We're really trying to maintain or move towards a carbon neutral position, but at the same time, measuring it can be quite difficult. And yeah, it's really hard to do, but I think it's really something we are trying to achieve, and it's always on our minds in terms of making sure that our carbon footprint is as neutral as possible, because we don't want to impact the environment more than we should, because then that's kind of against the whole idea behind the companies.
Yeah, I fully agree there, and I can appreciate the point you were making about measurability and the importance of quantifying emissions. So just wanting to switch towards talking to you about your experience as a founder. It's inspiring to meet someone who's so focused on how a business can make positive impact whilst also still being profitable. And I spent some time looking through the Zero Waste Club site, and there's some interesting tips for aspiring entrepreneurs who wish to set up their own business. Just to summarize here on the podcast for our listeners, what would you say are the three key ingredients for a successful business that also wants to make a positive impact?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really hard question. I'm going to just put a caveat that these are three that I think would work. In my opinion, from what I've been through so far, I think having a passion for the mission is really important. And I think, I guess, because my both businesses are purpose-based, so it's a lot easier to be passionate about the mission, because when you start a business, so many things go wrong. It feels like some days everything's against you. You feel so lonely sometimes. And so I guess having a passion for it really pushes you through all the hard times. So that's really, really important. I think it's really underestimated, but having a passion for it is really good. Because I know for my dad, I started a tile shop for him, and I had no passion for it. I couldn't care about tiles. I just couldn't care at all for tiles. And within a month, I was like, I just had to quit. I couldn't do it. So, I mean, you really need to care, because then only then you can actually go that extra mile. And you really need to go the extra mile when you're starting up, because you never know what the extra mile could be. The second thing is execution. I guess loads of people just plan and like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. When I was at Imperial, like, we create a business plan, we iterate the business plan, but like, the business plan is so pointless if you don't actually do it, because you learn more about the market and the industry and the customers when you actually go out and actually interact with the customers, speak to the customers, actually try, make an MVP. So actually doing the business, or actually working on the business in real terms rather than on paper, is actually really important. And I think a business plan can come after, of course. So that's really important. For example, when I went to that fair in the yoga event, I only knew that toothbrushes were doing really well and there's a huge demand for it and what customers wanted from us. So that was really helpful for me to find out what I should be doing. And following like the lean model is really good, because it kind of gives you a structure on how to do it. Like, you should test, see if it works. If it fails, okay, do something else. If it works, then iterate. So iterating is really important. And the third thing I'd say is, well, which is more of a personal one, is having a team, or hiring well, or hiring the right team, or having the right people around you is really, really important. So basically that means you having a strong network is the most important thing ever. Network really is the biggest and most important thing. So I know Imperial always says you need to have a good network. Network is really important. And it really is, because I've had situations where, luckily, I've had people in my network who have been able to point me in the right direction or help me out with a certain thing. And it's been really helpful, because your network could introduce you to the right people, and you never know how somebody you meet could be helpful. So building a strong network is really important. And I think it's part of how you could succeed, is because it's all about who you know. And yeah, that's been really demonstrated in the last few years while I've been working at Zero Waste and Gomi. So network is super, 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 super important.
Thank you for that. And those are some really helpful tips, which I'm sure will inspire some of our listeners who have that idea but are hesitant of taking it forwards. And sometimes the best thing is just to take that jump.
Yeah, I think it's really important. If you like, just keep planning, you'll never do it. So you just have to do it. And you just need to, I know I'm not allowed to swear, but you know, you need to get stuff done. So it's really important to just jump in and do it, because if you don't do it, and doing it now is really important, because you're a student, so your risks are a lot lower, because if you fail, who cares, you did as a student. But as you become older, you'll have a mortgage, you'll have a wife, you'll have kids. So doing it when you're younger, there's a lot less risk, and it's easier to fail. Because when I did it, I was like, with Gomi and Zero Waste Club, after graduating from Imperial, I was like, okay, if it fails, it doesn't matter, I'm going to be fine because I'm so young. But if you do it later on in your life, it's a lot more of a risk. So taking a risk when you're younger is really good. Like, I've taken so many risks. When I think about it, I'm like, why did I do that? But when I think about it, it's like, it makes sense in terms of the stage I am in life. And you really need to be able to take risks at some points, but obviously not stupid risks, but like well-educated, well-informed risks. Because sometimes you will never know what will happen, because there's a bit of element of luck in it as well. So yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, fascinating. Really like that advice. So we're getting towards the end of the podcast, and I just wanted to finish with some questions which will prompt some blue sky thinking and perhaps provide some inspiration for our listeners to have that next big idea. Clearly, innovation in materials and design is important and can go a long way in developing a more circular economy. But ultimately, we're all consumers and therefore have a role to play. What do you think are the three most effective steps that we can each take to reduce waste individually, an individual responsibility?
So I think the most important thing as individuals is we need to be mindful. So I guess I like to use the word mindful consumption. So thinking twice before you buy something, or maybe instead of buying that single-use product, maybe investing into a product that is reusable. So I think being more mindful in what you consume is really important. And secondly, saying no. That's like, I think I found that really difficult, because I've always, when I was younger, I was always like, wanting to buy new things. You also want to have new things, new clothes, new this, new that. So saying no to certain things is really important. And that's really challenging, but that's a really quick and easy way of helping reduce your impact. And the third thing I'd say is probably investing your money into companies that actually care about the environment or care about the mission that you want to support. Because if you help increase the share of wallet for them, then that will be really important, because you're giving that money rather than giving that money to a corporate company who doesn't really care about the environment. You're helping to support this company, and that will really change the perspective of the corporate, because they're like, okay, look, this market is growing massively, we need to change our stuff. So there's been like loads of situations where big companies have been like, okay, like we really need to make our stuff more sustainable, make it plastic free. So investing your money into companies that are doing the right thing will help to push other companies in the space to do the right thing as well, because in the end, money talks. So I think you as a consumer have a lot of power in that. And I think that's really important to consider when you're purchasing new products or new stuff for somebody or as a gift or anything like that.
Yeah, I think the phrase is voting with your wallet, or something like that. Yeah. I've heard that. And then I guess, yeah, your second point also relates to the one you made earlier in terms of lots of people taking small steps is better than one person trying to make a huge impact that ultimately...
Yeah, I think like the whole idea behind like for us creating Zero Waste World, it's like we have to do it together. It's not one person can do it. It's a huge variety of people. It's like the government, it's businesses, it's everyone is a stakeholder in the environment, because they're all part of the environment or all using the environment. So that's really important to consider.
Yeah, that's definitely an important takeaway. And just finally, I wanted to ask, do you think that it is possible for society to completely eliminate single-use plastic and, I guess, more broadly, achieve a completely circular economy? And as we talked about, that's ultimately what GoMe Design and Zero Waste Club are all about.
I think it's not 100% possible to reduce, to prevent all waste from coming back into the economy or being reused, but we can strive towards creating a circular economy, because there's some parts of our lifestyle, for example, medical products, which are made of single-use plastics. Those things are actually quite good for us, quite good for society, quite good for people. So in terms of when people say like, okay, if we eliminate all single-use plastics, what about the medical side and other things like that? I'd say just it's reducing plastic waste in places where it's unnecessary, like food packaging and, for example, product packaging as well. So it's in different areas we need to focus on, rather than in all areas, because everything has to have a different approach. Because I still want to go to the hospital and get my blood without having an issue because of we're banning plastics or something. We're banning plastic fully. I don't think plastics are bad. I just think we should use it in the right way. And I think we've just come to a point where we're just using plastic for every single thing that we can. And so I think achieving a circular economy is possible largely, but there are some areas where this cannot be achieved, and may not be achieved from what I think right now, and it's something we just need to work on by managing the waste. So that's what I really believe in.
Yeah, that's definitely something for our listeners to chew on in terms of which industries are those which we probably can get to zero waste, and which ones are more important where we still need that. Well, that's been so inspiring to talk to someone from Imperial who's had such a great journey. So thank you very much once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Alan. I really, really enjoyed it.